science.
It's also funny how many of you are being completely fooled by predictive text. Yes, I know, my name comes up as Walked. I understand that. It's not, however, my name. Research Filter Time, and every week we do this thing where we go through some of the major science news of the week and we compare the coverage to the original studies and see if they match up, and when they don't, well, we generally blame the journos. Well, I'm here to stick up for the journalistic fraternities because it turns out it's not our fault. It's the fault of the researchers who employ people to do press releases that are misleading in the first place. Dr. Susanna Elliott is the CEO of the Australian Science Media Centre, and there's been research just published in the British Medical Journal that has found exactly this. Susanna, it's your fault.
Ha, that's not quite right. Look, I don't think we can let journos off the hook just yet. However, you're right, this new article does show that the weak link in the chain is indeed the press release. But as we know, good journalism is it means going beyond the press release. So, you know, I'm not going to let journalists off the hook. No way.
Hang on. But the scientists are clearly employing or relying on people that are misrepresenting their work, and they don't care enough because they don't have enough pride to go and make sure that they've got it right.
Well, look, you know, what the study shows is that, and we have to remember this is UK research, right? So we're not ready to blame Australian scientists just yet.
Right.
But what they...
just Australian media.
I'll come back to that in a second. It's important. Okay. But so what they found was when they looked at press releases from a bunch of UK universities, they found that about 40% of them contained exaggerated health advice. About 33% contained exaggerated claims about cause and effect. So things like, you know, saying wine is associated with cancer is one thing, but then saying drinking wine causes cancer is another thing. So, you know, a lot of them were prone to that.
Yep.
And then another 36% contained exaggerated inferences from animals to humans. So, mice thing. That's right. Exactly. Yeah. It was done on a few mice and suddenly we're saying we've got it. You know, we've solved a problem in humans.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that can be summarised in that sort of classic headline that people are so used to seeing, you know, the sort of classic cure for cancer that turns out to have been done on six mice, may not apply to humans at all, and if it does, probably won't be available for about 20 years.
Well, it's a breakthrough. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly. No, I was just going to say, I think that's the crux of the problem, really, is that a lot of institutions need to show that they're engaging with the public and they want to get the attention of the media. And so they use words like world first and breakthrough, thinking that that's going to get the attention of the media.
And it does, pretty much.
well, it does to a certain extent. But, I mean, the interesting thing that this research found is that when the press release didn't hype the research, they were actually no less likely to get media coverage.
Ah.
So that seems counterintuitive.
That is interesting.
And it's good news, actually.
That is good
news. It does indicate that journalists are not completely taken in.
We're not totally stupid. Yeah.
No, in fact, I would say that some journalists are actually allergic to words like breakthrough and world first, which means that when a world first does come along, they sometimes miss it.
That's right. Because we mean it this time. Well, you've been crying wolf for ages, so we're not going to listen. What was the point you wanted to make about geography, though, about this is British and not Australian?
Well, you know, I just think that for a start, the Australian media landscape is quite different here.
Yeah.
We don't have the same kind of tabloid reporting that the UK has. And so I don't think we can, just like the mice, you know, we can't necessarily extrapolate this to Australia without doing a bit more research, which is that annoying little phrase that a lot of scientists say, we need to do more research. but I think that it's true. The other thing here is that a lot of journalists have lost their jobs in Australia.
Yeah.
And a lot of those journalists have been taken up by media units in universities.
Yep.
So they're the ones often writing the press releases.
Yep. that's true.
So it would be interesting to look at the situation here.
So you can still blame journalists anyway, one way or the other.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's talk about Vikings. Because it turns out that we got the Vikings all wrong. The whole rape pillage thing is the way that they sort of spread. Not entirely true. They were just family people.
Yeah, well, that's probably a little bit of an oversimplification.
Right.
But it is true to say that what they found was it appears that they took their women with them. So, you know, this whole idea that Viking men just went off and raided and raped and pillaged is not not the whole truth. I think that that did happen, according to many experts.
They just brought their wives along when they were about to do it.
Yeah, that's right. So it's not as if they were peace-loving pacifists. It's just that, they brought animals, they brought their women, they brought their children, and they could show all of this with ancient DNA, which is pretty interesting.
How did they do that?
So what they did was they extracted DNA from the remains of 1,000-year-old Viking skeletons. Right. And they compared it to modern humans living in those areas where Vikings went, and they found that the thing is, what they did was they actually looked at something called mitochondrial DNA, and this is DNA which sits outside the chromosomes, and so it gives you an indication of maternal inheritance.
Right.
And so by looking at this mitochondrial DNA, they were able to show that women were, an important part of colonisation. They didn't just hang back.
Right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. And from that you can deduce that they were along for the ride, effectively.
That's right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Speaking of women, only women get pregnant, which is a fantastic segue to the final study, about the sensitivities of pregnant women, particularly smell, I think it is. You know, this idea that when you're pregnant you just smell everything, and I've witnessed this firsthand. I've seen this happen. Is it true, however, that the strength of that sense of smell is somehow determined by the gender of the baby?
Yes. So Polish research, this is.
Wow.
They found that women in the first 3 months of pregnancy, and in fact, when they're carrying boys, it goes on beyond the first 3 months, that their levels of disgust to a whole range of things, including smells and food and all sorts of things, is much greater than if they're carrying a female fetus.
Wow.
So isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it?
Why would that be the case?
Look, they think the main reason is that boys are actually more vulnerable as a fetus, and they're more prone to miscarriage. And so a woman who has greater levels of disgust is more likely to avoid bad food, for example, or anything that's likely to, give her some illness or, increase the chances of miscarriage.
Yeah, I see.
And so it's a protection mechanism.
Okay, and is it a perfect correlation, or is it just sort of like a general tendency that you can observe?
It's a general tendency, and, I'd have to say the thing that I found amazing about this research is that the questions that they asked these pregnant women were enough to turn my stomach. My gosh, things like, it would bother me tremendously to touch a dead body or to see a man with his intestines exposed after an accident.
You don't have to be pregnant to,
No. Yes.
That's okay. Also a fairly small sample, isn't it? 92 women, is that enough?
Yeah, look, I think the thing about this study is that it does come on the back of research that shows that people who are more prone to disease, including pregnant women, are more likely to show signs of disgust. So it's not a surprising finding. I think if it was a really surprising finding, you'd probably think, actually, those 92 is not enough.
Yep.
So I'm not too worried about that.
Okay.
There are other caveats with the research, but I think that that's the 92 is not the worst.
Susanna, thank you for joining us. And for all across the years that we've been speaking, would you like to come to our final show next Thursday?
I wish I could. I'll be on holidays driving to Sydney, and so I've decided to send Joe Milton.
All right. I look forward to it. News time, 7 o'clock.